This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us. Habitat for Humanity of Greater Chattanooga helps low-income families build homes that they would not be able to afford on their own. A few months ago, Jens Christensen became Habitat's new president and CEO after David Butler retired. Jens worked for the Chattanooga Community Kitchen for 17 years, serving as its leader for the past seven. Jens, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And congratulations since we last spoke.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been an honor to be named as the CEO of Habitat for Humanity here in Chattanooga. In a lot of ways, it's a great extension of the work I've been doing in homelessness for the last couple of decades. But it's the other side of the coin where I get to actually watch families not only work to build their own home, but get the keys to their own home.
What are some of the things that you are finding as you have shifted into this new role?
It's not that different from what I was doing before. There's still the social service element. There's still the element of helping people and working alongside people as they help themselves, really escaping poverty, looking forward to the future generations. I think with Habitat, the home ownership component, it's a game changer. I think we've all experienced during COVID, during this pandemic, the value of home, the importance of space. So many people that were stuck at home, they were working from home, their children were studying at home, schooling from home. If you think about that and you think about lack of adequate place to live, the space that you're staying in, you know, how important that is. I think I've really gotten to enjoy seeing some of the families recently. So the looks on their faces, the sounds from their children when they're actually getting the keys to their house, when they're finally there and they've realized what many see as the American dream.
We've also seen how much tougher it is to buy a home one way or the other because, and this is not only Chattanooga, as you know, and as many people listening know, it's all over the country. You have inventory that is tight. You have rents going through the roof. You have companies with outside money pouring in and building new projects. All of these threads put a strain on the type of work that you and others at Habitat are committed to.
If you look at it in Chattanooga alone, there are estimates that it depends on which numbers you want to go with, but that we have a deficiency of between 4,000 and 7,000 affordable units of housing in the city of Chattanooga. This is a nationwide problem. It's a problem that, as you mentioned, it's made worse simply by people who are speculating in the real estate market. We look at the inflated rents, look at the inflated cost to purchase. They're all relative. And then also look at the inflated cost of materials. We were having a discussion about something I never thought we'd be talking about, that we're experiencing a shortage of insulation. So we use a very specific type of insulation to make our Energy Star compliance, and it's for crawl space spacing. And we can't find it right now because the demand is so high that people are taking any insulation they can get. Just don't think about that, do you?
Imagine that.
Bathtubs.
Yeah.
Simple commodities that we normally, you think you walk into a big box store and you purchase right off of the floor. Windows are taking 16 to 20 weeks in some cases just to be ordered and made and brought in. And these are the normal ones that you would get off the shelf.
So how are you trying to adjust given where the supply chains are, given where the demand is?
That's a great question. There's a lot of pre-ordering that's happening, but it is a commodity. You have to think about the fact that prices fluctuate. And you see this, and you know there's an appreciation for the fact that lumber has more than quadrupled in cost over the last year, year and a half. And we're hoping those costs will come down, but you do have to think, all right, do we focus more on rehab? Do we focus more on helping people stay in the homes that they're in and cleaning those homes up? Do we focus on alternative construction? You know, we're looking at 3D options. We're looking at all the different things that might create efficiency in building, because ultimately, if we can bring that cost down, we can help more people into home ownership. You mentioned a minute ago when we were talking about affordable housing and just kind of the crisis that's being discussed across the country. It's certainly something that's not unique here. Fortunately, that brings a lot of innovation. We're looking out west where people are actually building 3D homes, 3D printed homes, or concrete infill homes, looking at things that are far less expensive to do. But it also brings the fact that there is this humanitarian crisis, if you will, that you look around and you couple that with the pandemic. And I keep going back to this, but home is the most important place in the world for most people. Rental affordability is a wonderful thing, but when you look at home ownership, you actually look at second generational poverty. You look at increasing educational opportunity. We have a family now that in 2019 got a home, and we have a testimony from the young man in that household now. He's completed his college education. He's looking at the fact that now he can actually move forward. He had a place to study, things like that. He had a place at the dining room table when he wanted to, in his own bedroom when he wanted to, and he credits having that home to his success. that's what homeownership creates. It's that opportunity for the family to literally rebuild their lives and create a new future. Other examples of that, if you look at sociological studies, you see that the incidence of criminal justice system involvement decline incredibly when homeownership is involved. You see that people are able to create a better income for themselves and, again, like I mentioned a moment ago, for their children. So you couple all of that, and I think it brings home for us the importance of home, of making sure that homeownership is an option and affordable housing is there, and it creates for us a drive to look into these innovations.
Which areas of the city face the most critical needs when it comes to the work that Habitat does?
If you look at the concentration of poverty, it is really in certain areas in Chattanooga. There's an argument to be said that affordable housing should be everywhere in Chattanooga. And there are a lot of things to think about with affordable housing. You don't just think about the cost of rent. You don't just think about the cost of purchase. You also need to think about the opportunity and the choice that that family and that household has. So in my point of view, I don't think we should be focusing on just any one part of the community. We need to be focusing on the community as a whole so that we allow families to have a choice of school system, a choice of social mobility, so that if they want to live in a certain area, they're comfortable in that area, or if they simply want to stay where they grew up, they should have that choice, because I think it all goes to the social equation as to what will create success for that household. And realistically, I think that family needs a choice. They need to be part of that decision and that process. But when you look also at the concentration of poverty, you do start to recognize certain zip codes, certain areas in Chattanooga that definitely are in much, much greater need. I think we can look at Ridgedale, we can look at Orchard Knob, we can look at East Chattanooga, Alton Park. You can see areas that are historically developed, but that have a much, much lower concentration of income and oftentimes a much, much higher concentration of outside ownership. This is something that's a tremendous issue with affordable housing, because you have speculators come in and they purchase, they may live across the country, they may be part of an LLC that is owned here in Tennessee, but is realistically owned by partners from across the country, California, LA, it's going to be New York, Florida. We're seeing a lot of Georgia and Florida people that are coming in and they're seeing an opportunity here. And then they are driving rents higher and higher, or they're driving the price of sales higher and higher. Again, couple that with the pandemic and the value of that space, and we start to see more and more people wanting to purchase for their own home ownership, and demand is at an all-time high, really edging people out of the market. One of the biggest things I think organizations like Habitat can do is we can actually drive the cost for affordability down. We can keep it where people can achieve that, and we can also create mechanisms that encourage people to be able to move into the conventional mortgage market in the future, and therefore we can look at ways that more and more people can access affordable housing using the same invested dollars earlier on. And I think you mentioned a moment ago, what are some of the things that are happening to try to encourage that? There are discussions around things like community land trusts, things like cooperative ownership, where you have a co-op where there's an equity stake in it, but it is still contained to affordability. There are multifamily units that can be constructed or renovated or rehabbed. So there are a lot of innovative ways to look at that. And I think we're in a great position right now with the mayor that we have, the city council that we have, the county in general. People are willing to talk about alternative ways to create affordability. And of course, at Habitat, we're talking about alternative ways to create affordability with that ability to build some equity so that you do have an ownership stake. You do have a future that actually helps change the trajectory of your family, where you can build an element of wealth.
Coming from Community Kitchen, as you do, and settling into your role at Habitat, how do you see the problem of homelessness in this city, and what role do you see Habitat in helping with that problem, even if it's as a partner with other organizations?
Well, that's a great statement. Partnership is so important when we look together. I think there's a collective effort that people need to work together, and everyone has a role. The city has a role, the county has a role, numerous organizations have a role. There's no question that over the past 5 to 8 years, homelessness has actually gotten significantly more difficult, become more of a problem in Chattanooga than it had been before. A lot of that is policy failure, but a lot of it also is just an increased need. And I think when we look at it, Habitat really is the same coin, just the other side of what I was doing at the Community Kitchen for the last almost 20 years. The work of the Community Kitchen is incredibly important because it is work where people start off at the beginning on ground zero, literally, with homelessness, and then they move, hopefully, into self-sufficiency. With Habitat, it it's that next step where you actually empower someone to become a homeowner, to develop wealth in a different way. Historically, the model, however, has really focused on people that are at 70% of AMI, which is the adjusted median income, 70%, 80%, sometimes up as high as 90%. Most of the folks that are experiencing homelessness will fall into the 30% or below. And there really needs to be a look at ways, and that's where some of those alternative means come in, where you might have a co-op or you might have a land trust where there is a vehicle to allow someone who does not have that high of an income to begin developing an equity stake, having ownership, and moving forward. And I think that the creative solution is realistically when those agencies, the groups, the government, everyone comes together, they talk about the big elephant in the room, which is affordable housing is not becoming any more affordable. The cost to construct continues to go up. The need continues. If we have, say, let's go with a low number. If we have 4,000 units that need to be created in Chattanooga, we've got to work now and we've got to work quickly. And it's going to take, I'm a big fan and advocate of home ownership, but it is going to take a mixture. It's going to take an approach where there are multiple types of housing available, multiple paths into affordability, and of course, supportive services to surround some of the folks that are experiencing homelessness or might have greater need involved as well.
What projects or efforts do you already have on the calendar there at Habitat as we look at the rest of this year?
Right now, we're in the middle of two homes that we're building. We have a third one slated where a family just picked out the lot. These are in the Villages currently down in Alton Park. Beautiful homes, very pretty. It's really, for me, the lifeblood of what Habitat does. It's the heart, okay? I was lucky to step into a group of people that already had a group or a program going on called the Orchard Knob Collaborative, which is an incredible program where it's actually driven, and this is what's so pretty about it, so beautiful. It's driven by a woman named Marvine, who is the head of the Neighborhood Association in Orchard Knob. They are then helping us select the programs and the projects that we're going to work on. The Neighborhood Association is telling Habitat, telling Tom Osborne over at Park Ridge, telling the other partners, Green Spaces, the Y, the groups that are involved, what they want, what they need. And then we're in there working with them together. So that's really a very cool thing. That one, however, is home repair streetscapes. It's actually kind of a neighborhood revitalization type program. We're hoping to do more of that. We're looking into other opportunities. We have a program right now called Aging in Place, which helps people that are aging in their own home stay in their own home and adapt that home to be a nicer place for them as they grow older in that space. It does a lot of things that are very basic, like rebuild or replace a roof. And then it also does things like adapt the bathroom to be handicapped accessible or build a ramp so that someone can get into their home and they can stay in it. In addition to that, we partner with the City of Chattanooga in home repair programs, which are basic critical repairs to bring homes up to speed. Sometimes it's hard to look forward, but you can look back. At this point, we've done 294 homes that we'll have completed by the end of the year since Habitat was created in Chattanooga. And we've done about 120 of these home repair style homes, you know, where we bring things up and do critical repair and make sure that people have a decent place to live.
And if people want more information, if they are looking for help, if they want to give help, where can they go online? Where can they call?
So they can visit our website, habitat.org. It's H-A-B-I-C-H-A-T-T. So Habitat Chattanooga, Habitat. org and learn more about it. And you know, one of the biggest challenges during the pandemic, talked about this a few times during this segment, is that realistically the cost to construct continues to increase exponentially in most cases. The need continues to increase, the value on home, all of those things. It's so much more apparent. But then there are also folks that are struggling because of the pandemic. So the expense, it's there, the need is there, but the funds are not often there. So we are always looking for corporate partners, for individuals, for people that want to volunteer, assist our families getting into home ownership. They can learn about it on that site. They can also call us, 756-0507. They can visit us on Facebook, of course. And you know, we have all the social media. It's available right through our website, the easiest place to find it. And we are always looking for volunteers.
All right. Jens, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Ro Anderson was born and raised here in Chattanooga. She is the founder of Girl Stance, a Chattanooga nonprofit that teaches yoga and life skills to young Black girls. Ro, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Ray.
Tell us how things are these days with Girl Stance. You are out there. You and the girls are out there.
Yeah, it's been an interesting journey. So Girl Stance still stands as is. You know, our mission is the same, that we want to create a safe space for our community and our girls to explore modalities to help them cope with situations like the pandemic, right? So we offer them a safe space to explore modalities to help them gain healthier mental health habits and physical health habits. So that still stands. However, our direction has shifted just a bit. We're well known in our community for our retreats, our outdoor slumber party style retreats, right? Which has always had a focus on mental health and physical health. However, we're digging deeper into our direction for mental health and mindfulness practices. So we're still doing our retreats. Unfortunately, we weren't able to do it this summer, the months of June and July, but we're looking to get one in by August. But we're continuing to offer day retreats and day activities that still introduce our girls to tips and tools about mindfulness. So we're still out here doing the good work.
And the shift in emphasis drives home how much we've heard about mental health during the pandemic.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, during the pandemic, I think like many organizations, we've had to watch. We had to watch and keep our finger on the pulse of the cultural and the needs of our communities. And with that, we found that what we were already offering in hindsight was what we decided that we need to lean more into, because maybe, I don't know how to explain it, but maybe what we were offering wasn't very clear to the people in the community. You know, when we offer our retreats, I think a lot of people just thought, oh, we just go camping, right? And it's like, no, that's not what Girls Dance is about. You know, we like to have fun, obviously, but we're very much about mental health, mindfulness, and equipping our young girls, specifically, you know, our target communities for Black girls, with these tools to help them cope with challenges in our upbringings and also challenges in society.
Speaking of challenges, what challenges beyond what we've all heard about mental health, what challenges have you heard from the girls in what they have experienced?
Yeah, I think, you know, unfortunately, or maybe not so unfortunate that we have science, but unfortunately the science is proven to be pretty accurate when it comes to our kids growing in anxiety and stress and signs of depression. We're seeing a lot of girls beginning to show interest and ways to cope with finding more peace and understanding their thoughts about what's happening and how to calm catastrophic thoughts. I think we all kind of experienced that a bit, you know, a pandemic hit the world. We're like, oh my God, we're going to die. You know, and it's nothing to, you know, laugh about, but our girls have expressed those concerns and those concerns can continue to linger. So with that, we're just amping up our instructors. We're growing our modalities in the way that we service our young girls. And we're going virtual with it. We're expanding our platform as well as offering our retreats. And yeah, I mean, our families and our girls are really, has really leaned on us a lot during this pandemic time. And it's been a great honor to know that what we offer is beneficial to these families and girls.
And the last time we spoke, you also were focused on some long-term plans, which at the time you acknowledged may have to shift. Mm-hmm. But talk more about where those long-term plans are now.
Yeah, things have changed a bit more too. So I don't remember exactly what that was, but I'm thinking most of it was virtual, a virtual platform.
You talked about virtual, but then you also talked about fundraising for a center.
So still, everything is still in its path. The virtual platform is what we're giving all of our attention into right now, although the center is still a part of the larger goal for Girls Dance. The virtual platform, we're looking to launch that late August, where we're going to have a platform where people can access recorded sessions that's guided by professional instructors, professional mindful coaches, and also counselors, where our girls can have more access to mental health counselors to help them navigate their emotional and physical experiences. So that is what we're really, really honed in on right now. As far as developing that platform, it's still in the works. We're doing our live recordings and our pre-recordings at the moment. We're just cleaning up what that could look like and making it accessible to our families, our schools, and individuals. And like you said, long term, yes, the grand goal is to have a center, a facility for Girls Dance where we can actually, you know, the great grand goal is to train our kids in this mindfulness and yoga techniques and for them to become the instructors of their schools and their classrooms and their communities. So that is the huge goal of our Yoga Art and Etiquette School for youth. We're just waiting, you know, to get into the right rooms and to have the right conversations with the people who are interested in partnering and being a part of this large mission for the future.
What have you found yourself coming back to again and again as a practitioner?
That's a good question. It's a good question. And the simple answer I would say, Ray, is stillness. You know, there's many, many ways to do yoga. You know, we can't deny that there are different types of yoga out here. There are different types of techniques when it comes to meditation and mindfulness. But I find myself coming back again and again to just quiet time. Even if my mind is just chaotic and thoughts are going crazy everywhere, I find that the stillness of it and just witnessing it and being okay and accepting it has been my personal practice. Because that's the, you know, as the overseer of this program and just, you know, having the desire to really want to help my community and save everyone, you know, we all have this complex sometimes. My mind can wander, a lot. So, yeah, I find myself coming back over and over again to just sitting on my mat or on my pillow and just breathing in quiet time.
I have to ask because I met him once upon a time when you brought him to the station before the pandemic. How is your son?
Oh, he is great. He's probably dealing with this better than anyone I know.
You always say that.
Yeah, I know. I know I said that last time. I always tell him he's like my little guru. Like he's my little teacher, you know. I think it's something to be said for kids who can keep that joyful, playful spirit, you know, no matter what's happening. And, you know, things are getting better. You know, things are progressing forward. However, my son has been the champion in just finding ways to keep joy in the house and to keep joy amongst all the things that we're trying to accomplish with the program and in the community. Me being a yoga teacher, he's kind of always had these tools since he's been a tiny, tiny boy, since he's been about 3. So he has it instilled in him. And he reminds me, hey, mom, you need to meditate sometimes. So he's my little teacher and my little accountability partner.
And for people who want more information about Girl Stance, where can they go online?
Yes, they can find us at www.girlstance, that's spelled STANCE.org. Look at our website, check out some of the things we've done in the past and what we're looking to do in the future. And also find us on Instagram at girlstancecha, so that's C-H-A. I hope I'm saying that right. I don't know if I'm ever saying that right. It's cha-cha. I don't know. So you can find us there on Instagram.
All right. Ro, thanks so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Scenic Roots. More in a moment.
This is Scenic Roots. This afternoon we have more from Sean Perkinson, John Steele and Yatti Westfield from a show, one of the first in front of an audience inside the theatre in more than a year at Barking Legs. The theatre's been quiet during the pandemic, obviously, with the exception of a handful of shows in the garden and some virtual concerts filmed in the theatre. This is the first time musicians have played in front of an audience in the theatre, with the exception of one other show, in more than a year. What a treat. Sean Perkinson playing the guitar, John Steele playing some very nimble bass, and Yatti Westfield playing drums.
Now we're going to do a Pat Metheny tune entitled Song for Bell Bow. Thank you.
Thank you.
bills are paying off. So I think we're going to do one, maybe two more. We'll make them quick. Guys, thank you so much for being such an amazing audience. Thank you, thank you, thank you. You guys are awesome. And thank you, Bruce, for making this all possible. I know I speak for the other two guys up here, but this is a very special place, all thanks to you. We're going to do one more, and then we're going to get out of here. This is a Stevie Wonder tune, but was really, at least for the jazzers, made famous by Jeff Beck. This is entitled 'Cause We've Ended as Lovers.
Thank you.
Thank you guys very much. We had a lot of fun doing this. You guys were an amazing audience. Thank you.
Sean Perkinson, John Steele, and Yatty Westfield playing in front of a live audience in Barking Legs Theatre on Dodds Avenue on Saturday, July 10th. The full 90-minute show is now on the station's website. Songwriters Jacob Johnson and Josie Clay will be playing live in the garden behind the theatre on Dodds Avenue this Thursday evening, starting at 7. Next month, Barking Legs will feature the Keith Brown Trio. Keith Brown is the son of the amazing pianist Donald Brown. With his trio, they will be inside the theatre on Thursday, August 12th, and Call Me Spinster will be in the garden behind Barking Legs for a show on Sunday, August 15th. Details are on the Barking Legs website. On listener-supported public radio in Chattanooga, this is Scenic Roots.
I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Roots. We come to you from WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Email us at scenicroots423@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at scenicroots423. Listen to us online anytime at WUTC.org and the WUTC app. For Richard Winham and the rest of our team, join us again next time for Scenic Roots.